Welcome to Speak Sex. This is your host, Eve Eurydice. Today I have with me Sarina, who is here to talk to us about astrology. Sarina is an editor at Creatrix magazine, which is a magazine, a feminist magazine that celebrates the creative spirit. And it is run by a woman called Jana Ostanov, who actually practices Vedic astrology, magic, art, and... Sarina is also an amateur astrologist. Welcome to the show, honey.
Thank you so much, Eve. I'm so happy to be here. What an honor.
Thank you for being with us. I really want to talk to you at first about the draw, like the almost, physical, innate, intuitive draw of astrology for women. I mean, there's so many more women who are feeling, called to read their astrology, hear about astrology, something, double. And it has been like that for my entire life, at least. So I think that there is a connection, a bridge almost, that astrology provides between ancient wisdom and, pre-modernity and femininity and the present moment where we're all trained to kind of like act like men, live in masculine time, work as if we were men, function in some kind of like artificial similarity or, that is conflated with equality. So astrology is one of those few areas where women can be themselves, I feel. So that's my first question. Do you see a connection between feminism, womanhood, and astrology?
Oh, definitely. I think that, it's kind of almost like a joke, a running joke among people on the internet that it's like, oh, well, if like how men poo-poo astrology and then are like obsessed with sports statistics and whatever. And it's a lot of people joke that it's something that women are really attracted to and men think is silly in this modern era. But the thing that I think is so fun about astrology that really draws women to it is that it's like, It is a science in that the ideology of it is related to actual mathematics and like astronomy and the degrees of the constellations on the horizon and the location of the planets. Like that is all quantifiable mathematics. And then how we relate to it is very metaphorical, poetic, esoteric. It's wrapped up in archetypes and storytelling. And so I think there's something very attractive to modern women about having a science that also is maybe not so scientific in the way that it expresses itself. So the way we measure is very scientific, but the way that we experience it is a lot more subjective and anecdotal.
Yeah. No, I see that. I still feel that it has some sort of, that it represents some sort of like memory, like psychic memory or soul memory, because I really think that it comes from the pre-patriarchal era. And then it was adapted during patriarchy by using, patriarchy's math and calculations and all of that. So in that sense, it became one of the proto-sciences. Still, its origin, I think, is like more ancient than that. And that it brings to us like intimations of another world where we could read the future and we could read signs in nature and, understand things differently than we do now, when we weren't so dependent on language, right? And on the definitions of language that come down to us through patriarchy. So I think there is like a place where, we can access another way of being, an expanded consciousness, maybe that was closer to nature than we are allowed to be now.
Yes. No, I totally feel that. And I think that you're correct in identifying that every type of human, and we can even say like pre-human ancestor perhaps, has looked up at the stars and you know, created stories to go, you know, about them or like felt it. And I think that you're really onto something when you say like the interconnectedness of nature too, because just like the way that astrology depends on so many different moving pieces, like in the cosmos, it's like, you know, it's not just about your sun sign, it's about the position of the planets at the moment of your birth, and then also how that relates to the movements of the planets throughout your lifetime. There's many, many, many subtle energies at play that are not necessarily visible to the naked eye or like understandable in a one-to-one causality, you know? And that's exactly what nature is like, because all ecosystems are deeply intertwined and interconnected in so many ways that are unseen to the naked eye. You know, that we always sensed and knew this as humans, and nature does have an innate awareness of herself, you know, because and we as humans being part of nature, before we like separated ourselves from the understanding of it, you know, that's how it operates. And you know,
And
bacteria,
that's
mycelium,
why,
tiny
like,
little
right,
cells.
yeah. And like our brothers and sisters who are animals can sense events coming way before we can with all of our like instruments, you know, our scientific knowledge and our data. But they still, you know, n like, you know, during a natural disaster, or, you know, they are much more prepared than we are. I just feel that all divination is, and all psychic phenomena, which I don't think astrology is a psychic phenomenon, but it is a sort of a form of divination. I think all of that comes from that, you know, ancient, like pre-patriarchal, pre-scientific past. And that's its value. And I think it's a great balance. You know, like when we live in a world that's so monopolized, it's a nice balance to have access to something like that.
I totally agree. And I think that actually you hit on something there, which is why a lot of women are not just drawn to astrology, but all of these kind of more like magical, you know, sciences, for lack of a better word, you know, to drawn to be witchy. And you know, because we know that there is so much going on with the subtle energies of the unseen world. And even though modern science has given us a more quantifiable like look at a lot of stuff, you know, bacteria and cells dividing under microscopes, all the stuff that, you know, we knew inherently must be happening, but we weren't able to observe it. And then certain planets that were not even observable in ancient times because they didn't have the technology, now we can observe them. We knew they existed, but, you know, we couldn't see them the same way that we can see them now. People know that that's not all of it. It's not like science has shown us everything, because every time there's a new scientific advancement, we learn a new thing that we didn't know. So yeah, I think, sorry, I got off a little off track there, but I think that in the sense, like the Western medicine, Western science, there's this kind of a feeling of like, we've figured it out. This is correct. This is what is the truth now. And the inherent like ethnographic wisdom and like ancestral wisdom of like ethnobotanical wisdom, like ancient cosmologies, all of these like creationists and stuff have been robbed of, like they've been taken away from people, and that's been happening for, you
Well,
know,
they have been
hundreds of years.
devalued, you know, and that's the, you know, the important difference. You know, they actually have a greater potential, a greater capacity for help, for healing, for help, you know, for humanity, because they are accessible to everyone. You don't have to get educated. You don't have to specialize. You don't need years of mentoring. It's something that if you have an affinity for it, you know, you can kind, you know, people can pick it up and they can use it for themselves as they need it. But because capitalism wants to keep us dependent on, you know, this over-medicalized authoritative state, right, where you need to go to specializing doctors who send you to other specializing healers. It doesn't matter. Even in like the even in the spiritual world, we're still like dependent on dominant, you know, paradigms, right? You know, like the shaman repeats the same exact, you know, effing ritual every time. I don't care that it's supposed to be indigenous. You know, it's just once it's limited like that, it and once it, the shaman is necessary for it to happen, and we have to go out to an authority figure or a specialist and usually pay them money to get that help, then we become infantilized. We become dependent again. So I think that all the stuff we're talking about, you know, like, I mean, we're talking about astrology, but yeah, you can include, you know, tarot cards, and you can include all sorts, you know, reading palms or reading auras or, you know, all sorts of divination tools. They all are, I think, you know, empowering. They're self-empowerment methods that allow us to connect to something more, you know, more freeing and more inclusive and more holistic than anything that we can get within the system, right? So, and again, I mean, speaking of astrology specifically, it's always, you know, more exciting to study it as you have for yourself. And be a seeker, you know, be like astro curious, than just, you know, go to someone who you think is right or is always going to be right because they were recommended by someone else, and then pay them a ton of money to give you your story, right? So that's, again, handing away your power. So what I want to talk about today is, kind, you know, bringing astrology into your life as a personal practice, as a personal kind of like meditation tool, and as an alternative to how we handle life, you know. And I'm going to take a moment and like and explain how I use it, you know, if I may. I find that, you know, I'm by character too fast, right? I'm very reactive. So when something happens, I want to immediately react to it, fix it, understand it. And if I don't, I feel like I should, you know, otherwise I have failed, you know, my extraordinary capacity, right, that I've been assured I have, right? Well, all of that's like behaving like the masculine, of course. It's like, you know, I go into my mind and I think I can control the environment, or at least, you know, the other person or whatever has happened to me, and understand it, and, you know, like react appropriately. So astrology is one of the ways where I reject that, and I go to look for other explanations. So, it always helps me a lot, because it kind of takes my focus away from this like masculine, you know, whatever, you know, young energy that's very astringent, right? That wants to condense everything to like, you know, right and wrong, you know, zero or one, that sort of thing. I get out of that tendency. And as I read about, you know, what's happening today in the planets, like, you know, if it's about a person, let me look at this person's chart. Can I explain something because of where my planets are and this person's planets are? Or, you know, if it's not a person, it's an event. It's like, what's happening right now in the cosmos? You know, and then just by shifting my focus and my energy there, I start thinking about other stuff. And I start kind of seeing a bigger picture, a very, very different, you know, alternative picture in which I am not in control, in which I have no say, you know, which I approach like from a place of humility, right? Extremely humble. And once I get in that space, I allow the event or the person a lot more room to do their thing without it having an effect on me and without necessitating like a reaction or a response for me. So it's something that, you know, serves me, you know, how we say like, don't avoid your first reaction or count to 10 or whatever. Like astrology is one of these ways that helps me, you know, count to like 1,000. And the deeper I go into like the, you know, the possibilities of what's going on and what's affecting what, you know, the further I move from this learned tendency, you know, to react like a dude, you know, like a master of the universe, you know, or like whatever's going on, I have to like either be responsible for or, you know, somehow able to change, you know. So anyway, I think that in that sense, you know, astrology in our daily life can be a tool for resistance, you know, for kind of like feminist or neo-feminist, you know, revolution, for a way to not do what we've been trained to do, you know, and take a moment. And it's a meditation for me. It's a form of meditation, because that's all meditation does. It kind of slows us down so we don't have to, you know, react from that place, from, you know, from our place of training, patriarchal training. All of our training is basically, you know, patriarchal, right?
Well, of course, yes.
So, but I want to ask you, before I ask you, I have some more astrology-related questions, yes. Like, you know, sex and astrology and, you know, compatibility, all of that. But I want to start with, like, where we are. If you could give us a sense of, like, what's happening in the stars right now, what are the planets doing, what era we're in, what year we're in, what month we're in, what's going on?
Well, as we are speaking right now, it is mid-March 2024. So the sun is in Pisces, and we just passed the new moon in Pisces. So the moon is now about 3 to 5 degrees of a waxing crescent. So it's a little skinny Cheshire cat smile, and the moon is growing. And so, you know, when there's a new moon, it's always going to be in the same sign as the sun, because the, why is that? Oh yeah. Because when there is a full moon, it's like the light of the sun is shining directly on the moon. And when it's a new moon, the moon is dark. Mm-hmm. So I think it's like,
okay, go ahead.
Oh yes,
yeah.
So, no, you go.
No, I just want to get the bigger picture first. So we're in Pisces. Oh, yeah.
Yes, the sun is in Pisces.
What's happening with the great, you know, what's beyond the moment, this month? Like, what's happening with the year? What's happening with the era?
So we've been, since 2008, Pluto has been in Capricorn, which is the Pluto return of the United States. So like during the American Revolution, it was, the Pluto was also in Capricorn. And so now that the US is in its Pluto return, that's a very interesting thing, because it actually, you know, your Pluto return portends death and rebirth and forced destruction of things that have outlived their time. And as we are seeing that there's been huge pushback against long-term institutions in the United States, there's been lots of like changes. And so Pluto as an outer planet, it's related to like what's hidden underneath. And so we can talk about during the American Revolution, there was you know, monarchic colonial rule, and the people who were, you know, the colonizers who were living over here in the US didn't want to pay the monarch anymore, and so they had a revolution. And so that kind of began
The,
the
let's call
upending
them the settlers.
the settlers. Yeah, the settlers. So they that began that began
Because
actually like
they
an
were immigrants after all, and they were most of them were rejects, so like
Well,
the word
that's
colonizers seems too strong for the kind of ragtag, unwanted, characters who ended up in America. Like, of course, the ones, they were sent by the colonizers, with a colonizing army to kind of rob a place of its resources and send those resources back to the king and the queen, right? So all of,
Well, when I
and
said colonizers, I meant more like the founding fathers, because they were totally like they're the ones who like funded the revolution, right? Like, of course the ragtag,
Yeah, there's like a
indentured
lot of
servants,
like,
they
yeah,
fought. They fought
exactly.
there.
And also like a lot of
But
the Puritans were exiled, a lot of the, in
oh yeah.
general, like the reform Christians of all kinds, were sent, had to come out here because there was no place for them in the mainland and so on and so forth. So it's not like, I just don't want to like n call them all colonizers, especially, the people. So, it seems to me that the colonizers, it serves as well to call the leaders of a people colonizers, if that's what they
Yes,
do.
well, yes, that's who I
Like,
was referring to. That's what I was referring.
are
Yeah.
we all in this moment, like 300 million of us, imperialists? No,
No.
our effing leaders are, but we don't, we're not, we don't want to be, right?
Right.
So
No, but Eve, that's what I meant. Like, who starts
okay,
the
good.
war? Not me, not you. Je Thomas Jefferson. And Thomas Jefferson, definitely colonizer,
So
totally.
anyway, so
Yes.
yeah, so last time Pluto w return was
Well, that was
similar in
the
Capricorn.
US's birth. Pluto was
Wow.
in Capricorn, the US was born. So, and also I believe the French Revolution was happening concurrently, if
Right.
I'm not
Yes.
mistaken. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. 1789.
Hold on. Let me look up when the Haitian Revolution was.
Oh, the Haitian one was around then too, but I don't know how long Pluto.
1791, also during Pluto and Capricorn.
Wow, cool. And it's happening again now. Haiti is
It's happening
also
again now.
like America and France a little bit, but there is always hope. The farmers will like take over after all.
Well,
And yeah, so in
yes,
France, I
but
mean too. So anyway, so
yes.
that's very int so Trump may win or at least close enough to create like a big event.
The thing about astrology is it doesn't say like what's gonna happen. It can't predict what's, but it can predict the flavor, or it can say like tension is possible because these sectors of the chart are being activated. And so in the case of like Pluto and Capricorn, Capricorn is an earth sign. I believe it's cardinal earth, but it's an earth sign that is very grounded in the structures that create, the day-to-day experience. So it's Capricorn is methodical. Capricorn, it's ruled by Saturn. So it's about timing
Work,
and work processes,
processes, yeah.
and systems and functions and containers. Cultural containers, ideologies. So that's all that. So then Pluto, of course, rules the underworld, the unseen, the inner coming out. And so all of the things that have been
All the
hidden
things that
under
we have been
behind the scenes
up,
related
right.
to those,
All the stuff
related
we've
to
been
structures.
oppressing, suppressing, repressing.
Exactly. Coming out. And so Pluto and Capricorn me you know it just means conflict around those areas. We can't say where the chips will fall, but I think we can see that since 2008 we've been experiencing, at least in the US with Pluto and Capricorn, with our return, upheavals around the way that the economy functions, the way that we govern, the way that we deal with, people, the And I think for me, actually, my fear of what is coming with this Pluto return is like a crackdown in like more martial law, like
Martial.
martial. Yeah, like I the cop cities that they're building, this I feel that a crackdown in the way that peaceful protesters are being dealt with, like and also I think I don't want to get it's just a very we're seeing the US's involvement in foreign affairs in a much more blatant way than I think the ever like the general populace was aware of in like generations past. We see where the money's going more. We see what's going on behind the scenes a little bit more, and it's just getting a little bit more chaotic in this time. So we will continue to see
And
big
when, how
shifts.
long is this for? I mean, this return, the Pluto in Capricorn lasts how many years before it's complete?
Let's look it up. I'm not exactly sure.
But we're also in the Aquarian age, right? We're also
Culmination of Pluto and Capricorn, and now it is shifting into Pluto in Aquarius. And so actually that's very interesting that that AI and all this technology is coming, because Aquarius is related to more ethereal wisdom and like alien downloads and like the completely non-concrete, as opposed to Capricorn, which is very grounded in the concrete and the material and systems functions. And Aquarius is more like quantum. And so it's interesting that we had this like quantum leap with the AI technology right as we're about to shift. And
Hmm.
the age of Aquarius is actually like debated. That like some people say that it comes at the end, that we're shifting into it now at the end of or will be at the end of the 21st century. And I think it was Rudolf Steiner said that it's not until like the year 3000. So I'm gonna look into that
But
too.
that's okay. We're just getting like an overview.
Yeah.
So we actually, I think, had like a number of planets, all of them in Aquarius, which is when,
Yes.
Bitcoin went really high, and the FANG stocks, like Nvidia went up like 800% or whatever. But now it seems that a lot of these planets have moved into Pisces, which is always a more chaotic time, I think, because Pisces sees every point of view, right? So like Pisces can identify with really everyone and everything, so it's really all over the place in a sense, like the ocean, very oceanic, like it the
Touches everything,
right the
every
river
biome.
the exactly it flows through, and the river that takes everyone in and keeps going basically. So but what is your sense for what's happening, what's coming up, what's happening the rest of the year? Where are the rest of the planets as you know it?
Well, at the end of March, we have our first Mercury retrograde. Actually, our first retrograde of the year is going to be a Mercury retrograde. And we have had the first couple months of 2024 retrograde free, which had been a long time since that had been. But in my personal experience, I did not really feel, I felt like I didn't really feel things moving forward for me personally, but that was just my own anecdotal experience of it. I was joking to someone the other day. I'm like, there haven't been any retrogrades this year, and yet I feel like it's been Mercury retrograde the whole time. But yeah, so we have the first Mercury retrograde coming up at the end of Pisces season. So it'll be like the majority of Aries season. We're going to be in a Mercury retrograde, and then absolutely.
Because
Yeah,
a lot
so
of
I'm
people look to astrology, to find if they are compatible with someone, or sexually or emotionally compatible. What do you think about that?
Well, I definitely believe that that's real. Astrological compatibility, it's not just based on sun signs. You know, like when people say, like, oh, compatibility, it's not real, like with astrology, I think a lot of times that they are saying it's more complex than just looking at your sun sign to sun sign.
But there,
So,
you know, there are cultures still like India, you know, with like a billion people, where you don't get married to someone unless your charts are compatible. And you know, they
They
say,
use the Vedic system. And they look, I think that system looks very heavily at the moon, versus like here we look more at like sun and rising and Venus. But yes, no, I think that it's definitely, in my own experience, it absolutely applies. And in understanding the way my own like brains and brain and emotions work. So I will give a personal example. I have my Venus in Taurus. And I've got some other friends that also have Venus and Taurus. And we are incredible travel partners because the things that make us feel good, the things that we are like, so Venus, it's not just about love and romance, it's also about your bodily comfort, your creature comforts, your aesthetics, and stuff like that. So if you happen to be aligned with somebody in your Venus and Taurus, it means you're going to be. Or your Venus in whatever sign, I mean, you'll be seeking the same type of fulfillment in your Venus areas, you know? And so as far as like work partner compatibility, I with my Pisces sun, I've got really close friends that have Earth sun. So one of my best friends and most common work collaborators is a Virgo sun. And one of my longest lifelong friends is Capricorn Sun. And we have a complementary awareness
Because you're opposite signs,
because we're opposites. Exactly. So we have a complementary frame of awareness. So as far as sex and romance goes, I think it's, you know, there's definitely. It depends on a lot of different factors, of course, but I absolutely believe that there is merit to that, you know, because if you are someone who's very embodied and you're really grounded in your body, you want to find, you know, if you have a lot of earth and then you're going to want to find someone that has that same type of, you know, ruling in their charts. And also I think sometimes you know, it's like there's no one to one. There's no like, oh, you have your Venus here, you have your Venus here, so you're going to be a match because there's always other factors. Like as we discussed, it's not just the birth chart, which has many different factors that and many different things that inform each other, but it's also like in the progress charts, it's like what is happening in the stars at the time. And you know, I'm a student of astrology. I would not say I'm not an astrologer per se. Like I've not read so many charts of people. I'm someone who is more understanding of the subtle energies of the different planets and through like, you know, through my own experience and through seeing what has gone around with the people around me, you know, how we relate in this way. But there's so many different complexities. Like you can look at the degree of somebody's moon to your sun, and you know, that says something. There's so many different ways.
You know, I have a pet theory. I'm going to change the subject again, but you know, I want to share it. I have a pet theory that the person's like astrological, you know, chart or you know, or destiny, what we used to call like the destiny that's written in the stars, really cannot be completed unless you study the chart of their death as well. You know, so like, why are we exclusively looking at the chart of the moment of birth and not also the chart at the moment of death? You know, because I think the combination of the two would make much better balance, you know, explaining like a life, you know, a person's life. But I think there's like l no money in it, because who's gonna pay? You know, like you're already dead.
Right. Well,
But
that would be
I'm
very interesting for
surprised that,
historic figures.
exactly. I think that that would make much more sense in, astrological study. And once you have enough kind of like data, you can then much more readily compare and come up with types. And I think it would be more, informative and more accurate. But anyway.
Yes. A lot, I believe Jyotish, like Vedic astrology, I think that they do have methods for predicting death. And I think that there are certain astrological sciences that they can both predict. They believe that they can predict the death, or actually I remember there was something that was happening for me. It was like I was having a Chiron return or something, and Yana said to me, she was like, there's going to be a big tragic event, probably. Like, this is indicated in this your chart, my editor at Creatrix, Yana. And my cat died, in
Wow.
that time period. And
Yeah.
it was, and it was like, I knew it was coming. When she said that, I knew that it was going to be about that because she was very old and she was at the end of her life anyway. But I was able to, I mean, I knew it was coming, but having it confirmed in the astrology, it made it soften the blow for me a little bit because I
Right.
was very intentional about my preparations, and so I found that was very helpful.
Yeah.
But it's
Yeah.
interesting that I think it would be interesting to study death charts as well, because are you aware of the phenomenon that people often die around their birthday?
No, I'm not.
That's in my life. That has happened with so many people. So many people I know have died within 2 weeks of their birthday, including like my grandmother, my brother. Like, I've known a lot of people to do that, and I wonder, it would in that case, there would be a lot of overlap with their birth chart and their death chart, for sure. At least the sun, and it would be interesting to see what else.
Well,
It's a little poetic, even, to
oh
be born
yeah,
and then to
exactly.
die, like in the with the planets returning to the same place.
Yeah, I would be interested in studying that, like complete, life charts that include the death chart. I just, I think that I would understand things much better and with my limited reading of astrology. But anyway, yeah. Okay. Well, basically, I think that's, we're trying to bring, this is one of the inaugural episodes of the podcast. We're back. It's a new season. And I'm bringing the conversations, into the place of like celebration of nature. What's timeless, time doesn't exist, and that's why we took a break and we're back. And it was like a wink of an eye. And also,
Last few
oh,
years really were.
yeah, exactly. The last few years since COVID, everything changed and everything, is not the same. It's becoming, I think. Everything is being reborn and becoming, so including America, apparently. Yeah,
Time
and
will
just
tell.
like I think also astrology, vibes with like that place of gratefulness, which is a nice place to kind of return to, So it allows for that as you have the sense of belonging in a much greater universe, in a cosmos that's not egocentric or anthropocentric, right? So, but thank you for joining us today, and thank you for this conversation about the stars and what's written in them. And
Yay.
thank you, everybody out there, for listening. And until next week, keep speaking sex and stars and nature and love.
Be still, my.